Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We're reading in Srimad Bhagavatam, the beautiful story of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we're reading 12th canto, chapter 4, and text 5 through, I think, 15, something like that. So text 5, you could repeat. Dvi pararde tva atikrante. Brahmanak parameshtinaha. Tada prakrita yaksapta. Kalpante pralayaya vai. Please chant. Dvi paradhe, two paradhas, paradhas, two, and atikrante, when they have become completed, brahmanaha, of Lord Brahma, paramestinaha, the most highly situated living entity, tada, then, prakritayaha, the elements of nature, sapta, seven, kalpante, our subject, pralayaha, to destruction, by, indeed. Translation. When the two halves of the lifetime of Lord Brahma, the most elevated created being, are complete, the seven basic elements of creation are annihilated. We can do text 6 together. Esha prakritiko rajan pralayo yatraliyate andakoshas tisanghato vihata upasadite. Translation. O King, upon the annihilation of the material elements, the universal egg comprising the elemental amalgamation of creation is confronted with destruction. Purport. It is significant that Sukadeva Goswami, the spiritual master of King Parikshit, is broadly discussing cosmic annihilation just before the death of his disciple. By attentively hearing the story of universal destruction, one can easily understand one's personal departure from this temporary world to be an insignificant incident within the gigantic scope of the total material manifestation. By his deep and relevant discussions of the creation of God, Sukadeva Goswami, as an ideal spiritual master, is preparing his disciple for the moment of death. Text 7 together. Parajanyakshatavarshani Bhumau Rajanavarshati Tadhanirandhi Anyamnyam Bhakshyamanakshudhartita Shayam Yashanti Shankar Kaleno Padrutak Praja. As annihilation approaches, O King, there will be no rain upon the earth for 100 years. Drought will lead to famine, and the starving populace will literally consume one another. The inhabitants of the earth, bewildered by the force of time, will gradually be destroyed. Text 8. Samudran daikikam bhamam rasam sambartako ravi rashmi bhi bipate ghorai sarvam naiva vimunchati. The sun in its annihilating form will drink up with its terrible rays all the water of the ocean, of living bodies, and of the earth itself. But the devastating sun will not give any rain in return. Tataksam bhartako hami sankarshana mukhotitaha dhaita anila vegotaha shunyambu vivaran ataha. Next, the great fire of annihilation will flare up from the mouth of Lord Shankarshan. Carried by the mighty force of the wind, this fire will burn throughout the universe, scorching the lifeless cosmic shell. Uparya dhak samantakcha shikadivam yusuryayo jamannanam vibhachandham dhagdakomaya pindaba. Burned from all sides, from above by the blazing sun and from below by the fire of Lord Shankarshan, the universal sphere will glow like a burning ball of cow dung. Tatak prachanda pavano varshanam adikam shatam paraksam vartiko vati dhumram kam rajasavritam. A great and terrible wind of destruction will begin to blow for more than 100 years, and the sky, covered with dust, will turn gray. Tato megakulan anga chitravarnan anekshataha shatam varshani varshanti nandanti rabhasa swanai. After that, O King, groups of multicolored clouds will gather, roaring terribly with thunder, and will pour down floods of rain for 100 years. Tata eko dhakam vishvam brahmananda vivarantaram. At that time, the shell of the universe will fill up with water, forming a single cosmic ocean. Tada bhumir ghanda gunam grasantapa uda plave grasta gandha tupriri palayat vaya kalpite. As the entire universe is flooded, the water will rob the earth of its unique quality of fragrance, and the element earth, deprived of its distinguishing quality, will be dissolved. Purport. As clearly explained throughout Srimad Bhagavatam, the first element, sky, possesses a unique quality of sound. As creation expands, the second element, air, comes into being, and it possesses sound and touch. The third element, fire, possesses sound, touch, and form. And the fourth element, water, possesses sound, touch, form, and flavor. The earth possesses sound, touch, form, flavor, and aroma. As each element loses its unique distinguishing quality, it naturally becomes indistinguishable from the more subtle elements and is thus effectively dissolved as a unique entity. Bhagavata, Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami, stays. Pretty frightening. All these grisly details of the coming attractions, of the destruction of this world. And I would be thinking that Parikshit Maharaj and some of the sages might be thinking, I'm glad I'm getting out of here, because it's definitely not going to get any better. Parikshit Maharaj was really a fortunate person. First of all, he was a grandson of who? Arjuna, right? His mother Uttara and father Abhimanyu. And just think how fortunate Parikshit was, not only because he has such a great upbringing, but also that in the womb, was going to be destroyed by the Brahmastra, and Krishna entered Uttara's womb and circled and protected this embryo. And Parikshit actually got the name Examiner, Parikshit, Examiner, because he was always trying to find out who that great personality was that was in the womb, just glowing, beautiful, effulgent around me. So he was always looking for Krishna. And now he's been given the gift, a gift that I know I would pay big bucks for, and that is to know when you're going to die. Wouldn't you like to know when you're going to die? I'm sure everyone would give some of their income for that. So now he knows when he's going to die, and he's in the best association on the planet. All the great sages there in the most auspicious place. And he's hearing so much knowledge, all the Vedas. He's hearing this constantly for 7 days. Being in the best atmosphere and best preparation to leave his body. So he's a very, very fortunate person. And so now he's listening to this description, which is quite hair-raising, all about the destruction. When you think of creation and maintenance and destruction, first of all, you might think creation, that can be fun at times, to prepare something, to think of something, be creative, and give all your energy to create something. Use some of your passion in that way. And then there's the maintenance. Oh, gosh, no one likes to maintain anything. Usually you throw the maintenance papers in the garbage and you think about it till it breaks, right? And so maintenance is modal goodness. It requires a lot of, steadiness to maintain something. And then destruction, you'd think that would be easy. You have a bunch of cards there, you pull out one little card, they all go boom, right? Simple, a lot of fun, Kids love to destroy things. I remember I was in the Miami Beach Hotel Temple, Govinda's building, I forget what it was named. What was it? The Govinda's Vaikuntha building, okay. And I was looking out the window, and I saw all these people lined up on the streets and cars stopped, and so I went up on the roof and looked down, and all these other people on roofs looking in a direction. And all of a sudden, within a minute, this huge hotel just went, poof, huge, one of the biggest hotels. It just went poof, boom, and it just dropped down like this. So simple, you think destruction is so easy. But here we see that not so easy. There's a lot going on here. 100 years of this, 100 years of that, different influences coming in. And this is showing Parikshit Maharaj the wonderful the intensity of Lord Krishna, his orchestration of this whole event, which is really just like a halftime show, because there's other big destructions later on, which are even more exciting. But so it's pretty impressive display of Krishna's power and energy, and we should have great respect for that Lord who is on our altar right here. Of course, he doesn't light the TNT or anything, but he orchestrates the whole thing. So at this point, there's not too many survivors left on the planet, and at the most, they are just trying to survive, and they're actually willing to give compromise their human qualities to the point of eating each other, having children just to eat them. I mean, that's pretty low. Who would want to to survive to do that. I remember when we were building our first little thing over on the East Grove farm, it was that 26-foot tall thing, and I was thinking, this is the place I'm going to want to be, because when everything goes bad and everyone's coming to our farms and they're going to be probably trying to steal our cows and everyone's going to be hungry and they're going to want the water and everything, I can be up there, you know, with a gun and, you know, protecting everyone. And I was thinking, this, I can see everywhere around. If you're up there, you can see so good. And I thought, is that what I want to do? I want to survive. I want to keep this for myself and have to kill everybody else. And I thought, no, it's not worth it, you know, to survive. So here there's a few survivals, but it's not a nice situation at all. But this is really just a magnification of what's going on now. People are at the point of, you know, just trying to survive. Prabhupada would make fun that, you know, I think it was to Brahmananda's parents or something about, oh, they were so proud that they raised one son or something, you know, that they were able to have money to raise one son. But Prabhupada said, you know, this should be such a simple thing. But here, it's getting to the point where we've made so much technical advancement that we can barely keep our bank balance, you know, at neutral. So it's a little bit of an embarrassing situation. And the people that are struggling for this, they are compromising their human qualities. We see it. The degradation is going on at a rapid pace. We're keeping up with this prediction, if not passing it by on the side, I think going a little faster. So these people are sacrificing for what? To get bad qualities. But the great sages and saints, they're in doing these sacrifices, and ourselves, we're doing these sacrifices for what? For destruction of our bad qualities. And this is a sacrifice that is beneficial, that's worthwhile. We should really not have to worry about maintaining ourselves. And because Krishna will take care of us. When Krishna sees someone actually willing to give up something, especially if you give up your lives to serve him, he isn't going to forget you. He's going to make sure you have what you need. I mean, it might not be that fancy car and the great apartment and all that kind of stuff, but he's going to give you what you need. And the devotees, that's also an austerity, just to be satisfied with what the Lord has given you. Someone said that today, that, oh, I guess that's what we're going to get. That's what Krishna wants us to have, right? So this is the mentality of being satisfied as a devotee of Krishna, that he will take care of me and I will put out as much as I can towards him. I will sacrifice and endeavor to please him in whatever way I can. So Pariksit Maharaj now has had his notice and he's completely prepared for his departure. It's going to be very, very soon. And so death can come in different ways. Death can come like a hurricane. Hurricane seasons, August, September, and you see it lows. They put out what? They put out your batteries, your flashlights, your drinking water, and the generators, right? They're trying to supply you, prepare you for a hurricane in case it comes. So death can come as a hurricane. It gives you some warning. You can go and you can buy these things. Or for devotees, when we look in the mirror and we think, yeah, I should start preparing, right? So then we start increasing our rounds, we start reading more, we get a hold of different groups for reading, we do try to do some more Sangatan, try to do some more preaching, get a little bit more serious. So we have some warning. We should understand that warning is there. Just look in the mirror. And then the death can also come as a tornado. Now, tornadoes, you know, you don't have much warning. You really have to scramble to get with, you know, to find some shelter. And so this is this might also happen too. It reminds me of the story. I think it was a devotee in France, maybe Nandakesh can fill in the blanks, but there was a devotee on Sankirtan. She was a lady devotee doing book distribution and got hit some kind of an accident or something, and she was ended up in the medical vehicle taking her away. And she told the man next to her, said, just put my beads on my chest. And then she was gone. So the man was very impressed. So this is short term, you know, it might just be like a tornado. So we have to really be prepared to be able to chant. Or to be, if we can't chant, then to remember the Lord, or to grab onto our beads, or to think of Radhe Shyam. So this is one way it can come. And then sometimes there is no warning. No warning at all. And at that time, we have to have a lot of brownie points of service and the mercy of your spiritual master there, and hopefully remember Krishna. I remember we were in Giranagari. The boys' ashram was taken on a bike journey to State College. It's around mountain roads like this. And the boys were all, you know, in the bike thing. But there was one boy kind of straggling behind. And he was a little overweight, and he was kind of like the black sheep of the thing. But he was very KC, Krishna conscious. He was known as being very Krishna conscious. And a car came around, hit the boy. He immediately was thrown from his bike and killed. And everyone was devastated. The kids, you know, no one had, you know, a child never died. You know, their friends, you know, actually died with no warning. So this can happen, Kalyapani, no warning. But he was supplied, just coming from a men's group meeting, thinking of Krishna, no doubt. So it is important that we, you know, take Krishna consciousness seriously, and so that when the storm is over, whatever kind of storm it is, we wake up and we're with Krishna. So this is the advantages of stocking up on hearing Krishna's pastimes, regularly hearing Bhagavatam, doing service, preaching, and all these wonderful, blissful activities that we get to do. So to ensure this transition of becoming more Krishna conscious, we have to keep both feet on the bhakti marg, not letting a drift aside, and cleaning away the bumps, the aparas, like we heard yesterday, so many things that stumbling blocks can be in our way, especially these offenses to other Vaishnavas. So this we have to do. And we also have to look out for Maya, because she is lurking there on the sides of the road. These material desires can always creep up. So we have to be careful to shoo her away. Because she's very convincing. Even to devotees, she can convince you that, you know, give some percentage to me, and you can give some percentage to Krishna, but it's okay, you know. I promise, you know, you'll get what you want. And then, of course, she tells you to bend over, and then she kicks you right in the behind. So we have to be careful that we have some very good guards on our bhakti path. And Maharaj Parikshit, he's got the greatest bhakti guards. He's got all the saints and sages. He's got Krishna Katha 24/7, he's in the best situation. Maya cannot penetrate that. She doesn't go near. So we have to have that same atmosphere. But many times I suggest different people to do volunteer services, or names come up, and it always comes up that, well, the younger generation and many other people, they're too busy. Too busy with their responsibilities. Lots of excuses like this, and it's true. There's this Kali Yuga, as I said, it's more complicated now to exist than it was many, many hundreds of years ago, with bills and everything. But still, there has to be a plan. The Vedas have a wonderful plan for us getting our Krishna consciousness revved up, so that we can remember him at the time of death. And so we have to follow that plan. And amongst that plan is that we are in different ashrams. We hang out in different ashrams, especially for grihastha life, when all those responsibilities hit you hard. There is suggested that they have deity worship in your home, or they help with the deity worship of the temple. It's suggested that you regularly read with your children and chant Hare Krishna within your family. And that you invite great saints and sages over to hear from them, just like they sponsored these Ram readings and things like that, or the guests that are coming, surely some householders will invite them to their homes for prasadam and to hear from them, so that they can be fixed in their Christian consciousness despite the things. But also there's this quotation in the Prabhupada used, simple living, high thinking. We can also, you know, find out the little extras that we have, extra activities, maybe a little extra sense gratification, maybe a little extra this, a little extra that, that could be put aside. And then it would give you less entanglement so that you can volunteer and do more missionary work to help Srila Prabhupada's and Lord Chaitanya's mission. So we all have our little confidential lists of extras, every single one of us, no matter what ashram you're in, of the little things that you know that if you didn't do them, you would have more time. I always like to be in the Pujari room when some householder sticks his hand in and says, this is the 4 o'clock offering. And he's like, you know, running to work, and his wife probably went to work, but here it is, here's the 4 o'clock offering, you know. But that's such a nice thing. Very dedicated, steady. He's doing that service despite the inconvenience. And surely Krishna is very pleased by that 4 o'clock offering. I see that there's people always out here waiting to jump on it because it's always such a nice offering. There is one householder, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, 10 children, government position, so many responsibilities. And he gives writes a beautiful song, Durlabha Manava Janma. And this is about the utilization of this human form of life. So I'm going to read the translation because it really gives us a lot of good advice. Although the human form of life is the rarest opportunity for attaining spiritual perfection, I am now lamenting bitterly. This is because somehow or other I have been born with such an opportunity but have simply wasted it by never worshipping Lord Krishna. Oh, to whom shall I tell the tale of my misery? Having married and entered the entanglements of materialistic family life, I passed my time in vain. I never got any tangible gain or permanent benefit, but only trouble and botheration. What kind of world is this? It seems to be just like a magic lantern show wherein so many shadows and optical illusions dance magically before my eyes. I feel great attachment and identification with such a world. And thus day after day passes without any purpose whatsoever. When this body drops dead on the ground, what will it then remain mine? At that moment, all my sons and dearest loved ones will not be able to give me any happiness. I work hard just like an ass every day. And now I'm wondering, for whom am I working so hard? I am still surrounded by so many illusions. I waste every day in useless, insignificant work, and I waste every night controlled by sleep. And in every 24 hours, I never consider that cruel death is always sitting right in front of me. I imagine that I live a very carefree lifestyle, sometimes eating light a lot, and eating a little if I feel like it. Sometimes I see nice things around the town, or sometimes I do not go out at all. Sometimes I wear opulent clothing, or if I'm in the mood, I'll wear something simple. I live so carefree that I never consider that one day I will have to give up this body. But in actuality, my poor heart is plagued by constant anxieties regarding the maintenance of my body, my house, my wife, my family members, and my social obligations. All these anxieties are pinching me sharply and truly destroying my intelligence. Alas, alas, what a remorseful situation has arisen. I am engrossed with all this trouble, but I never consider that all these things are temporary and subject to perish very soon. After I'm dead and gone, what will remain of my material opulences? When my body is thrown into the pit at the cremation grounds, it will simply lie there motionless. Then many crows, vultures, ants, and worms will come and playfully sport there. All the stray dogs and jackals will become very much delighted and in great ecstasy. They will make a festival ground out of my body and have a huge feast. Just see, such is the ultimate destination of this material body. And the most amazing thing is that all material opulences, my house, family, and friends, have exactly the same destination. Therefore, I advise those of you who have keen intelligence, please give up all these temporary illusions presented by Maya and search after the means to get pure devotion to Lord Krishna, for this is the only eternal truth. So we have to search, no matter what ashram we're in, we have to search and find time for Krishna consciousness. And we have so many wonderful programs that we can engage in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So many people are worried about their material achievements. You know, I've got to leave a nice inheritance for my family. I have to get everything in order. Meanwhile, we're not considering that the greatest thing we can leave is that we have a Krishna conscious heart, and that we've put Krishna consciousness in the heart of many, many other living entities. This is the greatest thing we can leave, the greatest thing we can do in this lifetime, exemplified by Srila Prabhupada, how he did that. He put Krishna consciousness in the heart in living entities all over the world. He made a revolutionary change of consciousness to this planet. So let's see what we can do. Make a plan, pray, and try to put in practice what Srila Prabhupada has given us. Of course, Krishna has his plan too, his destruction plan. For those of us who don't make the best use out of it, then we might be here for the next halftime show. And this is a time when, you know, Krishna pushes the pause button and then a little refresh button, and then we come back again. We get another try. Fun, huh? Get to go through the whole thing again. And I was thinking, I look at these animals and think, how many more births they have to take till they get to human form? You know, if you figured out the average of the life of every species, 8,400,000 species, and you figured out and put it all together, how many years that would be? How many? Oh, a long time, maybe through many devastations until you get to human form. And then if you blow it, well, pretty bad. Here, Maharaj Pariksit only had a few days to get it together, but he took 100% advantage of the situation. We don't know how much time we have left. We should take 100% advantage of every day. If we really analyze ourselves, what percentage of the day are we directly in contact with Krishna through our chanting and service and everything? We should try to increase it. We should figure out a plan to increase it and give more freedom to our soul to unite with Krishna again. Can you imagine if Maharaj Pariksit had heard this, that he was going to die in a few days, and he decided to just go off in the forest by himself and sit down and meditate? Do you think it would have been the same? Do you think maybe his mind would have bothered him? Maybe he would be thinking of his relatives and of the kingdom and this and that and that and this and that? It wouldn't have been the same. But he took advantage of the Krishna conscious situation that he was blessed with. So we've been blessed. Srila Prabhupada is blessed with this Lord Chaitanya's mission, which is exciting. Every time I get an opportunity to preach, it was just like, wow, another opportunity. We were getting ready for a thing tomorrow night. I was so disappointed when it was canceled, you know, to sit in a panel discussion with other people. Hopefully it'll come up again. But tomorrow also there's an Earth Day at the Santa Fe. It'll be a different kind of preaching, but it's exciting to figure out how you can capture these different souls and be part of this Sankirtan movement, which is, I mean, Krishna doesn't need us, Lord Chaitanya doesn't need to spread it, but somehow or other we get the opportunity to do it. So we should push ourselves and take those opportunities, and we'll be experience a transcendence. We'll experience what it's like to be on a different platform. So when there are things of destruction and degradation going on, well, that's all right. We're on a different platform, a different dimension. We don't want to have to come back as an animal again, go through this whole thing again. There's one Bhagavad Gita shloka. It says the living entity in material nature thus follows the ways of life, enjoying the three modes of material nature. This is due to his association with that material nature. Thus he meets with good and evil amongst various species. Is this what we want? We want to go associate with this material world and come back and get good and evil, the whole thing again, and in different forms of life. I see these animals, when it's nasty out, they're just like, just standing there. Oh my gosh, now how long is it going to rain? And if I go into the tree, the drops are bigger, and where do I go, you know? And it's no fun being an animal. I remember one time amongst the devotees, and Papa was giving a lecture about a dog, and someone said, "I don't mind being a dog." And Papa said, "I bless you, be a dog, you know." But it's not fun to be a dog. You go over to the barn. I dare any of you to go over to the barn and just hang around there for 5 minutes. You will see the scrunchiest, mangiest looking cats around there. They're just miserable. This one cat is just like, it's just miserable. And then it goes and sits on your golf cart. And you're like, ooh, you know. So it's not fun to be in these bodies. And it's not fun to have to go through the destruction that's going to happen to these bodies. And it is going to happen. It's painful. But we can become transcendental. And we can wake up to next lifetime, to being with Krishna, if we just simply take advantage of what we've been given. So maybe someone has some comments or questions? Aspirations? Inspirations. Yes.
I'm just curious why is the living of the body considered pain? Except for a devotee who is taking Krishna and he or she
hasn't made it in this lifetime. There's a little bit more that he has to make. Why would living of the body be painful for somebody who has practiced thinking of Krishna?
Well, there's many examples. I know where my god sister recently in Mayapur, who does all puja and nishrin or something, his wife. Yeah, she just went through it. She was obviously in a lot of pain, but she was, were you there, Mahamaya, when she was leaving?
Prahlad Nishringa's wife.
Yeah, so I mean, but she obviously was in pain and things like that. But she was in a consciousness of the deities, waiting for the deities to wake up before she could leave. I mean, she was definitely in a different place, you know. So, huh? Why would a devotee be in pain when the body is being destroyed? Yeah, but there are examples that you can be transcendental. It depends on your consciousness. That's what we're trying to prepare for. That you actually just leave the bodily platform. I know Bhaktivedanta Swami said that, "I'm not Bhaktivedanta Swami." He was realizing that he's not this body at all, that he was actually a whole different person. And that person is not subject to pain. The soul is not subject to pain. Yes?
I remember in the sixth canto, probably third chapter, I read that Krishna is so merciful. He purposely keeps the little pain with the devotee even at the crucial moment like that, so there is no trace that devotee thinks, "I had a good life, maybe it was okay, it was good." No! Get out! It is painful. So it is his mercy. Yes, it is mercy.
Yeah. So if there is pain, then we see it as mercy. And even in this lifetime, there's so many painful situations for devotees. So many disruptions, but we can transcend it, and we realize that's a gift from Krishna. And it might take a while before we realize how he maneuvered things and why he did that, but at blank we take it as Krishna's mercy. So, yeah, if there is pain, then we accept it. And, of course, Papa has mentioned that it will be minimized out of the Lord's mercy. Anything else? Yes, Dhammaraj.
Srila Prabhupada also explained that this material body is a product of this material world. So, whether it's the devotee's body or not, these symptoms and these pains would be there. It's just the nature of this world. Just like the nature of fire, whether you're an innocent person or not, it's you're going to get the heat and the light and the burn from it. So this material body is like that. So even if in a devotee's body, he doesn't mean, well, the pain is not going to be there. But a devotee should prepare for a higher understanding despite these circumstances.
Yeah, we deserve what we get. We left Krishna, and we need to destroy it completely. Talking about destruction, we need to destroy the envy of Krishna that got us here in the first place, and the pride. So those are the things we need to pray for, the strength of the spiritual master to help to dissolve.
Although, except a few exceptional cases, like Dhruva Maharaj, he went with the same body. As the whole discussion took place by the acharyas, that four reasons why he is a bir bhakta. And one of the reasons he says, because Jamaraj told him that everything that you have taken from this world, please, you can leave it. But he said, wait a minute. And then he stepped over his head to enter into Vaikuntha airplane in the same body.
Also, the Lord Chaitanya's disciple who sings all the songs from Tukaram, yeah.
Tukaram did, Ballabhacharya did, that Nimai Pandit's father-in-law, he did, Rashikananda Prabhu did, he entered into the deity. I mean, it's many examples.
Yeah. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.